Hi, I'm Barry Conrad, and this is Banter with BC. Cheers.
Cheers.
We are officially in season two of the show, and I'm here with my guest, Nairi. Nairi, do you want to introduce yourself to the people?
Hey guys, I'm Nairi. I am a singer-songwriter, and I've also been friends with Baz for over 20 years.
That's a long time.
That's scary.
That's scary.
That's really scary.
And to kick things off, we'd like to start with something called Two Truths and a Lie. Do you know how this works?
I do.
You're up.
So there's like this whole thing about PNG where people think that we're cannibals, which is true.
Okay.
Up until a certain point, not anymore, but when I was 12 years old, I got to try my first human.
Okay. What's the next one?
Oh, I gotta say another one. I have a fear of buttons.
Okay.
Yeah. I nearly drowned when I was 3.
I'm gonna say the lie has to be the first one.
Oh,
it has to be.
No.
Am I right?
Yes.
Yes.
Got it right. I thought I was being sneaky.
No.
Okay. Yeah, that is a complete lie, but. You know, for a very long period of time when I first moved to this country.
It's like, y'all eat people.
That is so true. People used to ask me, like, do you guys still eat people over there? I was like, no, but I'm gonna eat you, you know?
Okay, you ready? I can ice skate, but I can't ski. I'm fluent in the South African language, Xhosa.
Okay.
And at my first job working in the library, I used to sneak into the kitchen and eat the Milo out of a can.
The first one's a lie. Am I? Tell me.
Well, I can ice skate, but I can't ski. No, that's the truth, so you got it wrong. Yes!
What? What do you mean?
I'm not fluent in the South African language, Xhosa, yet.
I thought you were.
Got it wrong, Afrikaans.
Dang, okay.
I don't think I've gotten that right for a while. So, I mean, yeah. You broke the seal with season two. Thank you, Nairi.
So good.
Appreciate
it.
Cheers to that.
Oh, gosh. I'm terrible at this game. Cheers.
So, what's the most spontaneous thing you've ever done?
I think the most spontaneous thing was going out to a cabin in the middle of the bush by myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where?
Like, it was down in the South Coast in a place called Jambaroo, I think. And I had to be forced to do it because, you know, as a mum and as someone who has a family now, you kind of don't think about yourself too often. And
yeah.
Dan, my husband, was like, Nairi, you just need to go do it.
Yeah.
It was the most terrifying thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Why was it terrifying?
I got there at night like an idiot and I couldn't find where I was going. Yeah, but the cabins are beautiful. They're unyoked cabins. I don't know if you've ever done.
Yeah, I've heard of them. They're great.
Incredible. Yeah, I went out there for like 3 nights and yeah, just ate, cooked for myself. Slept in till I wanted to sleep the whole day. Yeah, it was amazing.
That's really awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
That's great.
Have you ever done anything like that?
Haven't been out to the unyoked cabin, but I went to Bali on my own. That was pretty cool. That was just before the world shut down, as we know, that situation. But you know, it's special to do something for yourself. On your own, you feel like you can be anyone, do anything. But yeah, yours sounds awesome. And I think, yeah, especially being a mom and not having as much agency to do your own thing.
Yeah.
That would have been special. And like creatively, did anything come out of that time as well? Or did you kind of just say no work, nothing?
So it was a bit of a partnership. So I had to go out there and create and do, write some music. So I wrote a song for this compilation that they were putting together. But it honestly, it changed the trajectory of my life mentally.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
How so? What do you mean?
You know, I had just kind of forgotten who I was as a person and being out there by myself. And I'm an introvert, so I like having alone time to fill up and all that kind of stuff. And you don't get that with a 6-year-old. At the time, he was 4.
Yeah.
And you're just like, go, 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 go. And then finally, when I stopped, I was honestly nearly had a meltdown, you know, because you just don't know. But a meltdown more to do with the fact that, oh, hey, Nairi, hey, you know?
There you are.
Exactly, exactly. So it was really, honestly, I'll never forget that experience ever.
That's awesome. What's the biggest stereotype surrounding what you do?
I always thought that it was me being the color that I am.
Yeah.
But it isn't really, because I think most people have been confused as to what a Papua New Guinean is in general.
Yeah. What's the biggest stereotype in terms of a false stereotype that people think about you being a recording artist? Like your job, you know?
Well, I think that people think that it's very glamorous, but also there's a side of it where people think that we're all just a bunch of bums, you know, with no direction and that kind of stuff. Obviously, I've gotten to a stage of my career where that's not the case, and I've kind of built that whole thing to a stage where people respect what I do.
Absolutely.
Fortunately. I don't know, I think maybe things have changed a little bit through COVID. What I can kind of comment on, how family kind of sees what you do.
Yeah.
And I've definitely observed that through the people that I've been with in romantic relationships who are musicians as well, where it's not often considered a job.
Right.
Yeah. A job.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then you get to a point with your parents where just like, oh, I saw you on TV. It must be a real
something.
Job. It must
yeah.
be something.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, luckily my mom kind of, for the most part, understood what I did.
Right.
But I've definitely seen the misconceptions about, you know, being an artist or a musician and what that means.
Even like the whole thing, do you find where people say, so you still singing? Or you still, you know, the question, you still
singing? Yeah, you still see it.
Doing
it
that thing?
Really just trivializes what that is. And I think it also comes down to the money that people think can be made from that industry. And to be honest, there is a lot of money to be made from music, you know, and I think it just comes down to having very smart business brain as well and treating it like an actual business rather than just art. And you can do that if you wanted to, but finding that balance between art and business, and you can make it work, I think.
That's so good. Because I guess there's different mindsets of like, okay, what do you want it to be? And here we have Ricardo with, what do we have here? We have a margarita. Oh. This is going to this lovely lady right here.
Oh my gosh, thank you. What is that?
And what is this, Ricardo?
Limoncello Spritz.
Limoncello Spritz. Wow.
You got that. That was good.
You know, missed out. It's that whole thing where, you know, it depends what you want. Like some people just do music for a hobby. Some people want to just do RSLs and clubs. Some people want to take it to the world. It depends. There's no wrong.
There's no wrong.
But whatever lane you're choosing, are you saying that there's more than what you probably think that's out there and you can monetize it?
Exactly. You can monetize it. You know, songwriting. There's so much money to be made in songwriting. Like you're saying, there's so many different levels of what you can pursue.
Right.
Whether it's session stuff or singing at weddings, if that's your passion, to sing covers. Or, and the singers that do that kind of stuff or session work in studios are so amazing.
They're beasts.
I could not do that myself.
I mean...
No, but what I'm saying is that like I can't sit there and let someone tell me how to sing. It's like, you know, be sexier or be like, you know, lighter or brighter or that kind of stuff. Like, if it's for my own stuff, then sure. But... you know, I have a hard time.
How's that land? Good?
It's amazing.
So you were nominated for 4 ARIA Awards, including Michael Gudninski's Breakthrough Artist, Best Soul R&B Release, Best Cover Art, and Best Artist, which is incredible.
Yeah, you remembered all that.
How did that affect the trajectory of your life and career?
It definitely put more weight on the old, I don't know if they call them CVs in the music industry, but on the bio, it definitely makes it look a bit shinier.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of how your peers view you, I think it just elevates you within the industry a little bit, so you get access to a lot more opportunities, I would say. It's a weird thing because I experienced that whole thing through lockdown. And so
what was that like then? Because you say you probably couldn't go to the show, or like you could go to the show, or what?
I couldn't go to the show. I had to watch it at home. So they, ARIA sent out some home viewing packs, which is really cute. Yeah, I got to do it with my family around, which was actually a lot better.
Yeah.
And weird, but better. Weird in that, you know, you're not around the whole buzz and the lights and the cameras. You know, I'm very grateful that it got to do what it did, especially as an independent artist as well.
It's incredible. I mean, a 4-time ARIA nominated. That's an amazing achievement for any artist.
Thank you.
And you should be so proud.
Thanks, Baz.
You've worked so hard for such a long time, and that album didn't just come out while you were chilling. Like, you were going through so much as well, right?
Yeah, well, I was pregnant. Say we planned it, maybe, but didn't quite plan it because...
Yeah.
You know, I've had a long history of illness in my life, so no one thought that I could get pregnant. So I said to Dan, and I said, let's start trying. Within 2 months, we were pregnant.
There you go.
And
go
that was all... Yeah, go.
Jokes.
Got that in the bag. Literally.
Damage on.
Yeah, so that was all fun and exciting that I got pregnant, but then it all kind of... took a turn and I got really ill and had really extreme abdominal pains, and was basically in and out of hospital for about 7 months of being pregnant.
That's crazy.
The doctors didn't know what was happening, and you know, I was literally just high the whole time because I had like endone, morphine, other kind of narcotics or opioids that I'd never heard of before.
And I read rather that you were taking multiple endones and it just wasn't really doing anything for the pain.
It wasn't. But it also taught me how complex pain can be as well, you know. I remember when I actually had Nadav, my son, I was like, I've been through like 7 months of pain. This is gonna be sweet, you know, I've got this.
Yeah.
And no one told me that induction, like getting, you know, the contractions induced and all that kind of stuff, is so painful.
Right.
It's worse than actual natural
really?
Contractions. Yeah. So I went from going, yeah, it's cool. Within like 2 minutes, I was crying out for the epidural. So at that point, I was just like, man, pain is so complex.
Yeah.
So complex. You might think that you're at the top of your game with that kind of stuff, but there's so many different levels of it. But yeah, it was a challenging time. Dan and I had a restaurant that was running at the same time as me being sick, and that all fell apart, and that was his kind of baby.
Yeah, right.
As well. And
yeah.
Which was really heartbreaking because he was just in hospital with me the whole time.
Yeah.
On a personal level, it was really, yeah, terrible.
Yeah.
Really, really terrible. So putting the album together at that point took on a whole other life.
Right. So when you were just three, you were diagnosed with childhood cancer, and that caused complications in your pregnancy later on. And in your album, on your album three, you wrote a song called Hymn. Mm. And in that song, your lyrics say, oh, I'm naked.
Yeah.
Forgotten all my shame, don't know who I used to be, I'll never be the same. How did that time impact the creation of three?
So initially when I set out to write three, it was an attempt to kind of set things straight about people's perceptions of PNG and who I was as a Papua New Guinean artist who lives within a Western context. And because me and my producer, Jack Britton, he actually was the one that came to me with the concept and said, like, it's really interesting that all of this stuff is happening with, you know, the album, which was Blastoma.
Yeah.
Which is the one that came out before three. But no one fully knows who you are.
Yeah.
You know, they're constantly asking about PNG and your background, but no one's kind of putting two and two together. So we embarked on the album in regards to that direction. And so it became about proving who I was. But then when I had and went through all of that stuff, I was just like, you know what?
You know what?
I don't need to prove that to anybody. Yeah. You know, I am who I am because of the upbringing that I've had. Yes, I'm Papua New Guinean, but also I've had so many other experiences that have added to me being not just a monolith, just, you know, and that is a true story. You know, there are so many people from our backgrounds, like you as well, you know, being South African. There are so many
preconceptions.
Things, people of color, but also more specifically as a Papua New Guinean who was so surprised that not many people know much in this country about their closest neighbor.
Right.
So I think Davi really opened that up for me, that it didn't matter. As long as I'm true to who I am and the art that I'm putting out, it doesn't, people could take it or leave it, you know?
That's awesome. Because you moved to Australia when you were 16. How did your upbringing shape who you are today?
I mean, in so many ways. I mean, I've been in Australia longer than I've lived in Papua New Guinea, which is the same for you, right?
Yeah.
You know, I came here at the ripe old age of 16, very impressionable, very adamant not to lose any of my coolisms, I guess, that I...
Papua New
Guinean-ness that I'd come over with. Like, I didn't want to get rid of my braids. I wanted to keep wearing baggy pants and, you know, I didn't want to shave my legs or my underarms. I was just like, I'm a Papua New Guinean, you know? No one... I'm not gonna change in any way.
Right.
But slowly, you know, going to the school that I went to, I was like, oh, maybe I should shave my underarms. Maybe, like, ridiculous things, like maybe I should get a boyfriend, you know? Because back where I come from, like, you don't date until
really
way later, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. In that way, it was just a period of discovery of this new place that I'd never kind of lived in. Also, it was a real ripe time to discover other styles of music that I'd never heard before.
Right.
It was such a fertile time.
Kenari.
Yep.
Which actor would play you in a movie about your life?
Margot Robbie.
Colorblind casting. You know, we're all about inclusivity. It's diversity. We're not trying to.
J-Lo.
J-Lo?
No.
Okay. I mean, why not?
Don't ask me this. Point Wesley
in,
Snipes.
In a weave? That's perfect. Let's cheers to that. Wesley.
You know, I had the biggest crush on Wesley Snipes when
really?
I was eight. Yeah, 100%.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a beast, but I mean, okay.
Who was sure. your biggest crush?
Sandra Bullock at the time, and then Mariah Carey after that.
Sandra Bullock?
And Speed.
Why?
The first
How?
Speed movie. Was that a thing for brunettes? And also just her riding the bus, taking over from Keanu. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to chuck down my lettuce.
How's it going?
Is it okay to move the
Of course we can.
Down?
We can move situations around.
Continuity.
Continuity.
Oh no, that's why I
We don't care. We don't care about continuity on the show. So how has your creative process changed between Blastoma and 3? And do you have any non-negotiables when you're writing and recording new music? Like you have to have these conditions or settings?
Just by the way, you've got a bit of chili on your nose.
She's been pointing out, is it
well,
gone?
I know, you want to be
it's
professional.
Good. You've got to be professional.
The process between Blastoma and 3 were very different in that for 3, we kind of started in reverse. We collected a whole bunch of visuals first before we started writing the album, because the whole concept revolved around trying to present PNG in more of a visual light rather than sonically, just because PNG is so complex and it's hard to kind of present it as one thing holistically. So in that way, it was very different to Blastoma, very difficult to kind of work backwards like that.
Yeah, what made you, why did you decide to do visuals first?
Just because I felt, we felt like as a team, it would kind of just create more of an aesthetics that we could kind of have as a foundation to create the music on top of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I found that particularly difficult because of how complex PNG is and not being able to go, okay, so everything that we've collected is PNG, right. But that's not the truth. Mm. So, which is why, like I said earlier, I think that was one of the reasons why it kind of flipped to being more intrinsically about me rather than PNG as a whole. Yeah, I mean, it used to be that I had to be somewhere else that wasn't at home, like remotely, like my first album I did partly in Japan.
All right.
And then with 3, we went off to PNG and it was kind of like a process between France, with Jack being in France and in PNG and in Sydney. And now being a mum has completely changed.
Yeah. Wherever you can find that.
Wherever you can find the time to do it, you just have to do the work.
Yeah.
As opposed to sitting there waiting for the muse to, you know, emerge.
Yeah.
So that's been interesting to learn, and I found a new appreciation for songwriters that are such machines at sitting down and going, okay, this is the brief, we're gonna write this.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I've never been that kind of songwriter. I've always had to kind of draw on my own personal experiences, and now it's more just creating these worlds that I'm interested in and giving myself permission to do that, but still be authentic about it.
And you're exactly right about the respect for people who, like the blue collar songwriters, this is the brief, do it, this is the deadline, and done is better than perfect. Just do it.
I mean, I find it particularly challenging to do it as in the city of Sydney whilst my family are here, because I have to constantly take myself out of the headspace of creating and being present as a mom or as a wife or whatever. And that's really stressful. Like, how do people do that?
How do you do it? What's the biggest obstacle you've had to face as a woman of color in the Australian music industry?
I think it's two pronged for me. I think one, just being a woman of color, but from a Melanesian country like Papua New Guinea, has been challenging in the way that people try to categorize me.
Okay.
Because I feel like when I first came up, or when we first came up through the industry, you know, there was a certain kind of understanding of what a black artist is.
Yeah.
And a lot of it came from America. So that was everyone's understanding of that. You have to, like, I started off doing folky kind of soul, right? And people didn't quite understand that. I love folk, you know, I love the storytelling aspect. I love the authenticity that comes with it. But not many people at that point could really put two and two together.
Right.
It was just like, this is weird. She shouldn't be doing that. You know, no one said that, but you could feel it, which is so strange because the cultures that we come from very much about that life, you know, about storytelling and about, you know, marking certain things within life and certain, you know, death, marriages, mm-hmm. birth, that kind of stuff. We all talk about this stuff. I think that was challenging. I mean, I enjoyed the challenge as well. I must preface it with that because I don't want it to be like, oh, woe is me that I had to struggle and do this and do that. I enjoyed the struggle because of the upbringing that I had, and it was almost like, oh, how am I going to make this work?
Yes, exactly. Myself, I get you.
But it definitely was a thing that I was aware of, that mm-hmm. people always were like, where does, in those days, where does she sit on the CD shelf? You know, what genre?
Yeah, you're doing Lauryn Hill, why aren't you rapping? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you wearing a certain outfit? Like, and you're right, a lot of it comes from American culture, African-American culture, and saying, here's your box, here's your lane, do that. And if you're not in that, there's ambiguity that's misunderstood and not necessarily tolerated.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely more space now.
Oh, for sure. And I'm so glad, right?
Yeah, it's definitely like, I think this is probably the best time for music or art being created by people of color, because there is space being created now.
Beyoncé's doing a country album.
She's doing a country album, you know?
And that's fine.
Now is a really, use that word again, fertile time.
You can have any more kids? What's happening here? What's
maybe I'm just feeling like making some babies.
Fertile.
Yeah.
That's the theme today. It's like, you should talk to Dan about this.
Man, I should. Take it home.
What life challenge are you most proud of conquering?
I was looking at that meat. I was just like, I'm going to conquer that meat.
Conquer that meat.
Yeah. I'd like to say being a mum, but like...
I need a plate real quick because I'm going... Oh, always do this. Okay, here you go.
Close up.
Check it out.
Yum. But you know, it's just going to be for the rest of my life. Constant, motherhood. Yeah. I hate the word self-care for some reason. It makes me feel... weird, but
why do you feel weird about that?
I don't know. I wish there was a different word for it, but I guess learning how to put the right things in place to exist within, you know, life in general, whether it's being a mum, a working mum, being in the city, which, you know, let's face it, the energy everywhere has changed since COVID.
Yeah,
it's a lot more kind of everyone's just either traumatized from it or just pretending that they're not traumatized. And so there's this whole, like, we're living in this society of people that are completely just smashed by the last 3 years.
Right.
And you can feel that energy.
Yeah.
And you feel that energy when you live outside of Sydney. And we've done that for a little bit, living in regional New South Wales and then having to come into the city. You can feel the energy change, and it's more so now. You feel like you've got to just keep up with that rat race.
Yeah.
So I think I'm proud of being able to go, okay, these are the things that I need to do for myself in order to function in my work at home, as a mom, as a wife, as a singer. So in the mornings now, I wake up, try to get to the gym at 7 a.m., if not earlier. I go out into the backyard, I meditate, I pray, I, you know, have that time, then I go in, you know, it's breakfast time, getting Dovey to kindy kind of time, but I know now that if I'm not getting to the gym, this thing, it cracks, it's not happening. So I'm proud of being motivated and disciplined enough, not all the time, to be able to follow through with that stuff, because I know it's more like survival now.
Yeah.
You know, and I never used to be like that. So just finding a new respect for myself, but a respect also for other people who have recognized that and are putting those things in place for themselves. Yeah.
That's so good, because you're exactly right. I've known you for a long time and I've never really heard you talk about that.
Mm.
So I'm really happy, not proud, because proud says patronizing. Proud sounds patronizing, but I want to say I'm really happy for you.
Thank
that you're just like creating a boundary for yourself to put yourself first to be able to do everything else, because you can't really give out of an empty cup, as you know. So
yeah,
you know that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't always get it right, and I need to I need a holiday. But you know, it's just identifying those things and valuing yourself enough to stop and even just sit without engaging with your phone or someone else or Netflix or whatever. Just it's surprising how many people don't just sit and just look at, like, with this beautiful view out there. No one kind of does that anymore. It's all just very overstimulated and
That's awesome. And also a first, no one's ever shared anything like that before. And it's so important. And it's interesting that you found it almost hard, or you didn't like self-care. It's almost like, no, well, I don't want to. It's almost like you didn't want to sound selfish or sound like you're thinking about yourself, but it is important to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
It's not thinking about ourselves like, I mean, all that. It's about, it matters to take care of ourselves, to be able to function.
Is there one thing that you do that you cannot stop doing because otherwise your whole fragment will just come undone?
I'm exactly the same way. I have to get to that gym. It's not just because I love health and fitness. It's like, that's my meditation, active meditation. It sets me up for the day and sets my mind for the day, because if I don't, then this thing's gonna do it.
That's it, you know? And like in the music industry, there's not a very good outlook on taking care of yourself like that.
Yeah.
And I often feel, especially touring, you know, Alwyn, who sings backing vocals to me, he's very much about taking care of himself. And when we're on tour, you know, the last thing you want to do is work out. But he's very much like, Nari, let's go. We're getting him, you know, is there a gym in the hotel? We're doing that.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we invite other people to come and join us, but it's not something, it's not normal. Drinking is normal, but going to the gym is not normal, and there's something very wrong about the industry in that sense.
So many people will get a lot of value out of that, especially artists watching this, or anyone creative particularly. Yeah, the whole drug, sex, and rock and roll thing, it's a cliche because it's true in so many ways. You don't preach or advocate for health and fitness and wellness, but guess what? After a certain amount of time, like, energy's finite, and if you don't take care of yourself, then what? What happens later? So,
crazy.
So good.
Yeah.
Awesome, Nari. So on May 4th, you're presenting Fireflies with the world-renowned symphony orchestra.
Yeah.
To celebrate the release of the live recording of your sold-out performance Together in 2022, and up-and-coming artist Davi Nero, which happens to be her six-year-old son, designed the cover art. So what was the live recording experience like with them, and what can fans and supporters expect from Fireflies coming up?
I mean, performing with an orchestra, I don't know if you've ever done that before, but it's a whole other level. And I was lucky enough to do it with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra at the Sydney Opera House Forecourt. 5,000 people.
Casual.
Ridiculous. It was a real special moment for me. You hear people say, you know, I'd be happy to die tomorrow. And I was literally happy to die the next day, because I was like, this wasn't on my bucket list to perform with an orchestra. And for that to open up to me in the way that it did, honestly, was such a blessing and an insane opportunity as well. So for that first experience, it was a chance for me to see my song's essence kind of shine in a way that it doesn't with the band.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's just a wall of sound behind you. And it's impossible not to be overwhelmed by it or stop and be brought to tears or whatever. But it was a real moment of like, wow, I can actually feel my songs and my voice being supported in this whole higher level that I don't get to experience in any other context. That was amazing, and we got to do it a few more times with other orchestras around the country. To be able to do it for the second time with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, but also inside the Opera House, she's like, she's cool, she can come in the house.
That's
now.
Incredible. And for everyone watching from overseas, the Sydney Opera House is one of the most iconic venues in all of Australia, and that's incredible achievement as an artist.
Thanks, Baz. I don't know, I remember, you know, being a young musician and going, wow, when will I ever be able to play in the Opera House? I feel like that's never going to be accessible to me.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that, not just by myself, but with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, just blows my mind. I think there are going to be newer arrangements for the show. Paul Mack is going to be playing pipe organ.
Awesome.
And we're going to have God Tet, who are a Sydney instrumental outfit, who are going to join us and support us with their own set with the orchestra.
Sick.
Yeah, and hopefully my mum will be in the audience again, which was special last time. I also want to just tell more stories about these songs as well, so that people can get right into the DNA as the orchestra carries it.
So good. And if you head to sydneyoperahouse.com, you can book your tickets May 4th. Get there.
Get it.
And to finish things off, I'm going to hit with some fast trivia. You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. Question number one. Which female artist has won the most ARIA Awards?
Whoa.
Come on, Nag.
Jessica Marboy? Oh, Delta Goodrum.
Another guess? Come on.
Tina Arena.
Kylie Minogue. Question number two. Which Emmy, Grammy, and Tony Award winner rose to fame playing Celie Harris Johnson in The Color Purple on Broadway?
Oh,
and
gosh.
Quote unquote, trained like a boxer for her Wicked audition.
Erivo, Cynthia Erivo.
Got it. Yeah, that's correct. Question number three. Yeah. This legendary artist is cited as a major influence of many musicians across multiple genres and only traveled by tour bus for performances because of her fear of flying. Can you guess the artist?
A fear of flying?
Mm-hmm. Only ever traveled to do touring on a bus, too scared to fly.
Up until recently?
She's a legendary artist. Multiple people will say she's an inspiration. Who is
it? For me? Is she my inspiration?
I think you might have mentioned it, maybe. Go. Take a guess.
Dolly Parton?
Go again. Come on now.
Not Aretha, because she did.
She, Aretha. It's Aretha.
What?
Aretha Franklin. Do you want to take the guess again? Because I don't want to. Because she did.
Aretha Franklin.
Got it. Question number four. Who famously said no to Elvis recording his song, I Will Always Love You?
Dolly.
Didn't even finish the question. You got it. Yeah. Last question. What country is considered the most linguistically diverse place on earth? Was voted the ninth most beautiful by Forbes in 2022 and has sago as one of their staple foods.
Papua New Guinea.
Got it.
Hey.
Thank you so much for coming, Nari. It's been wonderful and awesome to have you here to kick off season two. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Love you.
If you love this episode of Banter with BC, don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Thanks for watching, and we'll catch you next time.